fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein in our Lambeau Field office. I think this may be the first time we've let listeners into this little space.
Yeah, I think you have to identify who's who, right? Because all we've been is voices.
I'm Ryan. Podcast.
And then
I guess that makes me Tom.
Only if you want to be.
Yeah.
Only if you want to be.
Well,
Spoon.
Now I can't hide anymore because
Cassidy,
my voice,
should be lauded for the wonderful arrangement that you can't really see behind us, but kind of the tidying. Good job.
I only had to point it out to him three times that the office got cleaned by a little fairy last night.
You threw something important away.
I did throw away a 2007 Seattle Seahawks media guide.
Okay. That one's okay.
You asked us if we noticed, and Spoon and I both have our heads in our computer. We're like, no. Like
men.
What? And yeah. It was completely over my head.
There's a lot of valuable information back there.
If you are listening through your normal audio podcast device, we do want to let you know the reason we're inviting people into our office is that you can now watch this podcast on YouTube as well if you want to see our pretty, shining, smiling, sweaty faces after long days of training camp practices. And that's what we had again today. Wednesday was a little bit of a walkthrough. It was inside because it had been raining all morning. But the talk of this week so far, though, is still Tuesday's practice. It was the first day in pads, and it was what Matt LaFleur called Jordan Love's best practice in the 3 years he's been here. Guys, y'all have seen him over all 3 years. Do you concur?
Hall of Fame, baby. He's going.
He and Romeo Doves are going to go in the same year.
Probably.
Clearly, the Packers panicked this offseason, extending this two-time MVP mm-hmm. when they had Jordan Love.
Four-time MVP.
Rosters. Well, this two-time reigning MVP back-to-back, and they had Jordan Love on this roster the entire time.
Well, you know, the point of it being really is that he's been so uneven and so bad. I don't know that to see him look like he's in command of the offense, that he knows where he's going to throw it, and then to connect on some really pretty throws, it makes you, you know, like bombs explode in your head. You know, like oh, that's really impressive. Well, it might just be solid, but it's such a difference for him.
In all seriousness, I remember an OTA practice last year. Middle of spring when he was dropping dimes and it was non-padded, but they were practicing. They were going, you know, close to full speed and he was dropping dimes and then we just didn't see it again. So it's not like we haven't ever seen Jordan Love hit a throw. Like we've seen that. To me, the difference 1 week into camp and very importantly without live snaps, that's what we've got to see. We've got to see the actual, because even Matt LaFleur said today, some of those throws with contested pressure in his face might not have gotten off, right? I mean, we got to see that, but he's been hitting the top of his drop and firing and really letting it rip, which is what we heard last year from Matt LaFleur that he wasn't doing. And I think he's looked more comfortable getting out of the pocket in camp early. I mean, we just didn't see that at all last year.
The ironic part about this is that the preseason is not going to be as good a test as practice because nobody blitzes in the preseason. You know, they'll throw up.
But he can be hit,
too.
He can be hit.
Someone will blow an assignment or something like that. But he's really facing pressure here in practice more than he's going to in a game. You know, Barry's been pretty aggressive blitzing his inside linebackers. There's a throw he made to Sammy Watkins that, it was a blitz off the corner, and he just stood in and moved his feet and made the throw, perfect throw. So I think practice is a pretty good indicator.
I just want to see it when it's not in a red jersey. He's wearing a red no-touch jersey right now.
Yeah.
And when he can get touched and he can't, you know, because now the pressure, you're right, there is pressure. He's been blitzing. But then the play extends if it would have been a sack and you can let it go and you can keep going. You can't do that in a game. There's no red jersey in a game. I want to see it when it's not a red jersey.
Maybe they should get blown out by Minnesota in the opener like at New Orleans where they could put him in.
They will really see. Not that the Vikings are going to be showing any intricacies if it's a runaway game in the fourth quarter, but Yeah.
Let's go back to that throw to Sammy Watkins, actually, because Aaron Rodgers referenced it today, saying that's where that throw is a perfect example of the strides that Jordan Love has made. And he gave a lot of credit to Tom Clements for those strides. Let's give a little bit of credit to Jordan Love as well for making them. But he said that it was the footwork. That's the difference. That's the biggest difference. Because a lot of young quarterbacks would take an extra step when they're getting into their base and mess up their hitch. And that Jordan Love has figured out how to keep his base set. And Jordan Love said that that was the first thing Tom Clements wanted to fix with him when he came in, was his base. And that that throw to Sammy Watkins, as Rodgers pointed out, was the footwork was perfect. And that made the throw easy. An otherwise difficult throw made it easy. So those are the little things that, at least from inside the room, they're saying is a difference in Jordan Love.
Well, we've heard that over and over again from LaFleur. It's his footwork, you know, his footwork isn't good enough. Everything in West Coast offense is tied into, you know, footwork and timing with the routes. So now he does seem to have his footwork. And I did notice a drill that I hadn't seen before that maybe is Clements' drill, where they have one of those pads, long pads, and usually you see them moving back and forth or over the pad and front, but they just stood with their feet spread open and then had to throw into the net, you know, into the little circles in the net. And so I think that's exactly what he did on that throw, was he got his feet established and then threw. Mm-hmm. And I think that drill was part of it. And I'm sure that's one of Clements' old drills that he's done for years.
That was a fun little drill too, because if you look at the net closely, one of the holes is red and one of them is blue. So halfway through the drill, they yell which color they want them to throw to. So they don't know ahead of time where they're throwing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a little something fun to test. Something else Aaron Rodgers said today that stood out. He said, quote, Rasul Douglas may be one of the smartest guys I've ever played with. He reminds me, with all due respect, of Charles Woodson. Is that exaggerating? Is that hyperbole? Histrionics?
Well, you cover Charles Woodson, Spoon, so.
Well, I thought he was going to say Leroy Butler, because he was the smartest player I've ever. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, this was, he was ahead of every play before it happened. And Charles Woodson was too, but he gambled a lot. And Charles Woodson got burned too from gambling. That's why I had a little bit, I was like, really? But I mean, Woodson was a brilliant player. I also thought Devondre Campbell's a pretty damn smart player too. I mean, that guy, every time you look, he's in the right place. So I agree with him about Rasul Douglas. I mean, you can tell he knows what he's doing. And he's been like that in camp. He's always in the right place. Talking to him, he's got a good, you know, you understand he gets the philosophical and strategical parts of the game.
It's still amazing this guy's on a practice squad.
It really is.
How that was the case, I don't know. He's a no-nonsense guy. He's very serious. You can, you know, talking with him in the locker room, you can always tell he's just no bull. I mean, mm-hmm. He is just a straight arrow. He does seem very intelligent. Now, I just didn't cover Charles Woodson, so, you know, it's tough for me to make a comparison.
Today in the locker room, Rasul was playing a card game with Sean Davis, and you saw there was a moment where Rasul was, like, talking to him, like, okay, well, what are the rules going to be? Like he said, no nonsense. He's like, we ain't playing around. If we're going to play this, we're going to play it to win.
That sounds like Rasul Douglas.
Yes, and he's a ton of fun to watch. He, along with Eric Stokes and Jair Alexander. Speaking of Jair, just a quick note. If you were out at practice on Tuesday when it was open to the public, Jair took off pretty much the second half. He kind of stood to the sides. He took his pads off. Matt LaFleur said Wednesday morning that was more precautionary than anything. He felt, quote, a little tight, and they want to make sure he could be able to play Friday night for family night. That being said, given the shoulder injury that he came back for, should you be worried if he's a little tight, or is it just it's hot out there, need to take it easy?
No, he practiced full in the jog through today. I thought he was – I watched him in individual, and I thought he was cutting and moving just fine. And, no, he for him to return, if there was any – concern whatsoever. Even in a jog through, he wouldn't have been out there today.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was his shoulder. It could have been a hamstring. You know, they're just they're not going to mess around with their best players. If you report to the training staff that you got a little bit of a tightness in your hamstring, they're going to pull you. So that's just probably what happened.
Over the past few days of camp, jumping to a different subject, by the way, y'all just keep up with me here. Over the past few days of camp, we've seen a lot of Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon not only catching out of the backfield, but going out over the middle, in the flat. And then Aaron Rodgers said today that that could be a huge part of their game, and he gave a big tip of the cap to A.J. Dillon as well, said he came in here supposedly purely as a power back, and now he's become one of our better, you know, pass-catching options. How much of this offense do you see those two becoming a pass-catching option in? I mangled those words, but do you get what I'm trying to ask?
I'll start. So I think we have to see how teams play the Packers without Devontae Adams. So they could always count on a double team with Devontae Adams, which meant, okay, then the defense, they have to figure out, you know, can they still get, are they working to still get Adams open, which they did all the time, or, you know, was there other options? So now our team's going to just play them straight up because they don't have a number one wide receiver. And that's where I think the backs come in, because if you're just playing them straight up and, you know, your safeties are back, you gotta dump it off to your backs, because sometimes there's not going to be anything down the field. And so you got to soften defenses up with throwing it to the backs.
I think the big question with those two is how much we're going to see them on the field together.
Yeah.
Because that's true. Both of them can catch the football, and we saw that. We've known that about Aaron Jones for some time, but we saw that with A.J. Dillon even early last season. I mean, remember Cincinnati. He had a touchdown catch, and he looked fluid, and he transitioned from pass catcher to ball carrier very quickly. And when he was coming out of Boston College, that was a big question in his game, right?
He hardly
caught the ball in college, and he's shown that now. And so if you've got two guys who are tremendous runners, dynamic ball carriers that have that pass catch ability, getting them on the field together, it's all about that best 11. We've seen that some in camp. I big question in my mind is how much we're going to see that together, because those two are in your best 11. So getting creative schematically and getting them on the field together, it should be a staple of this offense.
Well, what it does is force the defense to declare, are you going to treat them as both as running backs, or you're going to treat one of them as a wide receiver? If you're going to treat them both as running backs and go with your base defense, and they're going to, you know, motion Aaron Jones out into the slot or, you know, wide, and they're going to throw the ball. And if you treat them with a nickel and decide that, then they're going to pound A.J. Dillon up the middle, because you're going to be small in the box. So I think it does create some interesting matchups to do it. I don't think you can do it all game long, but it's, you know, for some teams who they go against who aren't maybe very good in the run, that'll be a pretty good attack.
You can't do it all game long, because even back at the owners meeting, Matt LaFleur, when we were asking about receivers, like, no, we need receivers. You need perimeter dynamic playmaking talent in this league. You cannot just go with two backs all the time. And I do think, though, that if you see them on the field together, you're going to see a lot of Aaron Jones moving around. And you're going to see a lot of A.J. Dillon as that traditional backfield running back. And Aaron Jones is going to have a lot on his plate to get all – and we've seen him do that. I remember, Kansas City in 2019 it was, when he had that big game as a pass catcher, had that huge third down catch late in the game, split wide. I mean, we've seen that from Aaron Jones, but – it's that to me is what it'll look like, is A.J. Dillon in the backfield, Aaron Jones moving all over the formation. But yes, at some point you do need the perimeter playmaking as well.
Aaron Jones, yeah, was in motion a few different times on Tuesday, which is always fun to see, and A.J. Dillon running a couple of routes as well. When it comes to pass catching options, though, let's talk about everyone's favorite player in training camp thus far, Romeo Doubs. Might as well go ahead and give him the bust as well when they're putting Jordan Love into Canton.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Matt LaFleur did say, you know, you need to see it when the pads come on. And a couple of the other veterans as well, Randall Cobb, said, you know, anybody can go out there and play essentially 7-on-7. and offense is always going to look good when it's just t-shirts and shorts. What happens when the pads go on? Well, guys, the pads went on. Romeo Dobbs still had a pretty good day. Yeah. I mean, we asked Aaron Rodgers today, can you tell what a guy has at this point, or do you need to see him in a game first? And he kind of said the preseason game doesn't really matter, but that being said, can you tell what Romeo Dobbs has now that you've seen him in pads as well, or do you still need to see him versus Minnesota?
Aaron Rodgers has said today what every single person I've spoken to in the locker room about Romeo Dobbs has said, and that's that he's had a wow play every day, mm-hmm. and you just don't see that from rookies come in, and from day one, every day there's a play that makes you say, wow. And I don't know if it's because it was the first day in pads or because the play happened right in front of me. Because, he mossed KeBion Into day one. He had the incredible back shoulder catch over Eric Stokes in the red zone two days later from Aaron Rodgers, which you just don't see that kind of chemistry from a rookie who's never even had the pads on at that point with Aaron Rodgers on the back shoulder. But that play that he had at the end of practice yesterday, the first day in pads, when Jordan Love threw him a perfect ball. It was one of the best throws I've seen from Jordan Love, rolling right, finding him in the backcourt of the end zone. Rico Gafford was in coverage, and Rico Gafford has, I think, very quietly playing his way potentially onto this roster. I mean, it sure looks like he's going to get every opportunity to make the 53. He had good coverage. It was textbook what you want in coverage. There was only one place to put it. Jordan Love put it there. And just the way that Romeo Dobbs snatched the football, the strength of his hands. I mean, I literally said, wow, on the sideline. I mean, it was.
And he got his feet down. Yeah. That was the hardest part.
Yeah.
Was getting his feet down.
It was impressive.
Yeah, it was very impressive. And, you know, fired up all. The entire offense was really fired up. And to that point, the defense had pretty much stymied Rodgers. It was a first and goal. Or third and goal drill. So every play was third and goal. And that was by far the best play of the entire drill. I agree. I mean, he's tall. He's got long arms. He's going to win jump balls. He seems to be able to get off the line of scrimmage. It all looks great. But, you know, you have to temper it. Mm-hmm. Just because the history of rookie wide receivers, the Packers haven't had a rookie wide receiver with 1,000 yards since 1952. So, you know, it just doesn't happen. And they've had some great receivers. It just doesn't happen. So it's going to be an up and down season. That's basically how it goes for rookies.
These are the stats that you have in your head when you've covered the team since 1952.
Well, I was there in 52. Billy Houghton had a heck of a year.
But, you know, I actually asked, I was talking with Randall Cobb about that very thing. Because from our perspective, and what do I say every offseason? What I say about a million times when we were talking this offseason?
It's not football till the pads come on.
Right. So you see a guy come in, and they're not in pads yet, and he's making wild plays. I talked with Randall Cobb, like, how much do you glean in terms of actual football valuation when they're not playing real football yet? And he's like, yeah, I mean, you do. He said you have to temper the praise with a young guy. You know, get in games, see it live. That's if that's translating, that's when it's especially impressive. But he's certainly caught, you know, Randall Cobb's attention, everyone's attention, Aaron Rodgers' attention. And I just, you know, if he's able to build from here, it's wide open in terms of opportunity. There is clear opportunity on this roster for any receiver who can make a play to get snaps and get that opportunity to make plays.
Yeah, and Amari Rodgers has done it too. I think he's had a pretty good camp to start out. He catches everything. I haven't seen him drop a ball. I haven't seen Dobbs drop a ball, have you?
He dropped one. He dropped one that was high in a red zone drill. I think it was during their walkthrough practice. So it was not even like a, you know, it wasn't that concerning, but especially compared to all the contested balls he has caught. And that's the thing, even when it's not padded, I mean, these are contested catches. He's going up over people, the back shoulder with really good covers from Eric Stokes, who's we know is a good cover corner. And he's had a lot of those contested catches. I saw him drop one ball.
I should have probably asked Brian Gutekunst this today, but it occurred to me, it was either yesterday or today, I can't remember, that if you look at all their new wide receivers, they're all hands catchers. They're all guys who with really strong hands. And I don't know if they purposely went out, consciously went out and did that, but Amari Rodgers catches everything with his hands. Dobbs catches everything with his hands. Even Samari Toure catches a lot with his hands.
No Jeff Janises out there.
Yeah, there's not a lot of guys who try to cradle it. Even on deep balls, you see them, they're trying to, you know, catch it with two. So that's a something to watch as the season goes on.
One last note on Romeo Dobbs, too, because we keep going back to his ability on 50-50 balls and contested catches, which is, of course, what sets him apart. It's what a few of his teammates have mentioned is what sets him apart. He had a play earlier this week where he beat Eric Stokes for a deep ball, and it wasn't anything to do with physicality. It was pure speed. He had a step on Stokes off the line, and Stokes has incredible makeup speed. And Dubs just kept a couple of steps on him the whole way, so he was able to haul it in for a long score. Romeo Dubs was hurt, so the only 40 time he ran was at his pro day, and I believe it was a 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5, 4.6. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was the big knock on him, and it was a knock that nobody around him agreed with. His very first college touch was a punt return for touchdown. So he's never been a guy that you watch on the field at the college level, and granted, it was Nevada. But it was never someone that you thought.
That's a good program, actually.
Yeah, it's good. It's not the SEC, is my point. No. I'm not just crapping on Nevada. Right. Nevada is a good program. It's not the SEC or even the Big Ten. It's not a Power Five. But there was never a point where people around him were like, "Yeah, this guy's speed. It might be an issue." Yeah, it was actually food poisoning at the combine. And you know how this pre-draft crucible is. You don't perform. And then all of a sudden, is it performance anxiety? What's wrong with this guy? He had food poisoning.
And he had an injury at pro day, right? Didn't he? I don't think he ran on pro day either.
He ran.
He was clocked as a 4.5 flat. I know that. I think that was his pro day. But what we've seen through the first week, if nothing else, is that for a guy that's a rookie to come in and from day one make wild plays, he does not have performance anxiety. No. Like he it's not too big for him.
It just occurred to me, Ryan is writing a piece on Romeo Dobbs. I think it'll come out before the season starts.
Yeah, probably next week.
Okay, it just occurred to me, him playing at Nevada. I would love to see you go to our editor and be like, can you approve a work trip for me to Las Vegas?
Is it Reno? Yeah. But it might as well be Las Vegas. I'd gamble.
You could stay in Vegas and then drive to
Yes,
Vegas.
Commute.
I don't know how far those are apart.
I like the way you think, Cassidy.
I'm just here to help you.
I like that.
Guys, offensive line. I'm just going to tee you up and say offensive line and let you take it from there. Because they've been kind of playing a little bit of musical chairs. Rodgers on Wednesday, when asked about it, didn't actually seem that confident. You know, he's good about pumping his guys up. And he said that there were essentially some concerns there.
Well, he said day one, the first day of training camp when he talked to us, that the offense was going to take its lumps, and especially against that defensive line. I mean, I think today he was asked about the state of the offense, and he said it's been about what he expected, because after that first day where he made sure to tell those chumps, he said in quotes, that it was 1-0, defense has had every day since then.
Yeah.
And so it's basically what – but, yes, there's a lot of moving parts on the offensive line. A lot of moving parts.
And that's typical of early in camp. And they do that, and it'll shift after the first preseason game. You know, they'll shift the starting lineup, and then after the second one, they might shift it again, and then they lock in. And then they, you know, for the next 3 weeks, they go with that starting line. I don't know what it's going to be. They're moving guys. They obviously like Zach Tom,
yeah,
who is a mini Elgton Jenkins. You know, he can play pretty much everywhere. They tried him at right tackle now, left tackle. He can definitely play inside. They know that. They've moved Royce Newman, right guard, right tackle. Neiman, left tackle, right tackle. Cole Van Lannen, left guard, right tackle, left guard. Jake Hansen, center, right guard. So man, they've tried just about everything.
The best I can tell right now is if David Bakhtiari is on PUP week one, Josh Nyman is the left tackle, and they're trying to figure out right tackle between Zach Tom, the rookie, and Royce Newman. Both of those guys have gotten a lot of right tackle reps. A big question is going to be Jake Hansen at right guard, who's been pretty much steady at first-team right guard. But is that Ben Braden last year? Because Ben Braden, first week of camp, was getting all the first-team reps, I think, at right guard.
Yep.
And then late in camp, Royce Newman took over that spot, and then it was Royce Newman's show the rest of the season until the finale in Detroit and then the playoffs. Or is Jake Hansen going to stick there? You know, Jake Hansen's been getting second-team reps at center. They lost Lucas Patrick, and Lucas Patrick was that jack-of-all-trades interior lineman, that really important piece for any offensive line to have from a depth perspective. You can see Jake Hansen being Ben Braden. And you can see him being a Lucas Patrick that can kind of do everything and sticks on the 53 as a guy that can slide all three spots.
I'm convinced that the guy that they're just waiting on is Elgton Jenkins. So if Bakhtiari comes back, it's icing on the cake. But I think that's a real question mark at this point. But Elgton Jenkins, when he comes back, that solidifies your line because he can play the weak spot. Whatever is the worst spot you have, he can play it. And if it's left tackle, you throw him in there and he's a legit left tackle. And all of a sudden your problem at left tackle is gone. So I think they're just crossing their fingers that he's ready after 4 weeks. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but when he comes back, they're a lot better offensive line.
It's a pretty good compliment that you can just throw him in at left tackle and he'd be fine.
I know. It's crazy that you can even
think of it. You don't normally just throw guys in there at that spot.
No, well, but then it's like, oh, well, he's really good at left guard, but he is really a kick-butt center, too.
Can you imagine if they have two of those guys? And we have no idea on Zach Tom yet, but we've seen him at left tackle, and we've seen him at right tackle, and we've seen him at guard in the off-season program. If they've got two of those guys, I mean, most teams don't have one.
Yeah.
That would be huge.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys on PUP, Christian Watson is still there. Both Brian Gutekunst and Aaron Rodgers today said that that's not really a concern for them because they feel like even though he will have to play catch-up when he comes back, that he has – they both mentioned his mental capability to catch up quickly. Does mental capability help you when you're facing a corner like you haven't seen at an FCS level?
I actually agree with them. I don't think this is a huge loss. He is a really smart guy. To me, where he's missing out is the physical part of it, the part where he has to learn that these guys are – I mean, he's a skinny guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he needs another year in the weight room. That's why I'm really skeptical that he can help them this year. If you can get your hands on him, it's over. He's got to figure out how to – at the line of scrimmage, how to get away from guys, how to battle, for jump balls, things like that. And he's not getting any of that right now. I think that's – a lot of what he's missing.
The speed of the game, too.
Yeah, the speed of the game, for sure.
Mental reps are one thing, but if you're on the sideline, you're on the sideline. You're not adjusting to the speed of the game. You can't do that unless you're actually on the field practicing. I think in terms of whether or not it's a big deal, if it's concerning, it depends on how your timeline is, right? I mean, if you're banking on Christian Watson being a difference maker year one, it's very concerning. If you need him to get on the ground running – in September, that's a problem because the longer he misses camp, the more delayed that acclimation process can begin. But the thing that Brian Gutekunst has stressed over and over and over again, Matt LaFleur too, is that it was a long-term investment.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a September-October of 2022 season idea when they traded up in the second round. It was the long-term that they were thinking of. So long-term, no. Long-term, I think he'll be fine, but how much it's awfully helpful that Romeo Doubs has looked like
just
a guy can play and can have some type of impact on the offense potentially early on, because they needed one of those two guys to stick.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't matter which one it is, second or fourth round, they'll take either one. If Romeo Doubs can continue developing and be that guy, it really helps him with Christian Watson.
I think they'd be very happy if Christian Watson could do what MVS did his rookie year, which was, you know, take the top off of defense every once in a while. He actually played pretty well
his rookie year. He had a good rookie year.
You know?
EMNEQ.
He played in the slot. And if they can just get that amount of contribution from him, I think they'd probably be happy, especially given the injury. Now, if he does more than that, yeah. But if he just did that, I don't think that would be a bad thing.
Aaron Rodgers also said, I heard Christian Watson got a really good score on his Wonderlic. I want to know what it is, because if it was better than mine, I want to retake it. So I'm sure they have
televised that. The NFL will find a way to put that in prime time.
I know, yeah. Right? I'm pretty sure. I asked Spoon earlier, I said, do they even take the Wonderlic anymore? I thought they didn't take it anymore. I legitimately thought that was something that they stopped giving.
I think, you know what? That's a good question. I think I've read that they didn't, but I don't remember anymore. Because I've seen Wonderlic scores out there, so I don't know.
Yeah, and you made a good point. Maybe the individual teams can still give them, but the NFL doesn't.
Overall. I don't know. I honestly don't know either way. It's a stupid test. Yeah. It doesn't. There's all kinds of guys who flunk that thing and are great football players, and there's guys who, you know, have really high scores and they're not very good. The all-time high, the only guy who aced it, who got 50 out of 50, was a punter.
Really?
What did Ryan Fitzpatrick get? Wasn't that like off the, like 46 or something? Well,
do you remember Greg McElroy? He had a big score on it. He didn't get 50 out of 50, but like he had one of the highest scores, I think, in the history of it. And
punters aren't just people too, they're smart people.
We should ask Pat O'Donnell what his Wonderlic score was.
Yeah,
hard-hitting questions.
Y'all go ask him. I'm not going to be the one asking that. Guys, before we wrap up, something that we have to address, someone that was not living up to their standard and it might get cut before it even comes time for roster cuts, the punting jugs machine. Mm. I don't know if I've ever seen Matt LaFleur that hot about something, at least not in a while. He even yelled at our poor Spoon here about it. He was
offended, Spoon.
He didn't yell at me. He was like really fired up.
Story.
And I'm like, I threw the old, oh, give me a break thing at him. Uh-huh. Like, you know, what was wrong with it? You know, and, oh, you know.
I'm really glad we have that moment on video.
It was funny, I thought. You know, he's like really fired up about a stupid jugs machine. You know, he's cranky, man. At the sideline, he's really hyper about the sideline. You know, like all these promotional people who are over there and us, you know, and camera people. And he's like, get back.
There's a bit of a more intense Matt LaFleur in this camp. I mean, he's practicing him more than he's done in the past, too. They're practicing every day. And now, granted, today, Wednesday, I think it's Wednesday. Is it Wednesday? It's Wednesday, right?
It can be Wednesday if we want it to be.
Was a jog through. It's their second jog through in the opening week. So it's not like every practice.
But a jog
through
is still something.
They're on their feet. They're on their feet.
He used to give them a day off in the middle of the week. And well, they probably did classes and stuff, but you're right. They're on the field every day, and he's really stressing that. And who knows? Is that part of, you know, what he learned from the New Orleans game last year, that they need to be on the field running through all the mental stuff?
Mm-hmm. Well, even today at the end.
He said they'll be in pads again before family night as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even today at the end of practice, they're in jog-through. But they're rehearsing end-of-game situations, which I think that's the type of thing that usually you might be able to do in the classroom. But they were, and what we saw on the second team was Danny Davis hook and ladder to Samari Toure, the rookie, and Samari Toure slid with like 1 second to go on the clock, like it was still in college, where after first downs, the clock stops, but this is the NFL now, and the clock doesn't stop anymore. And Adam Stenovich lit into him. And said, you have to either get out of bounds or you have to score.
Right.
Those are your only two options. Yeah. The clock doesn't stop anymore. So it's taken some things that, you know, that's the type of thing. It could be a quiz, you know, end-of-game quiz that they do in a classroom. Taking it on the field in a very light, tempoed practice. But they are still on their feet.
Mm-hmm. I saw a rookie last year make a mistake like that where it was in his second or third game. and the guy tripped when he caught the ball in front of him. It was a corner, and he didn't touch him. Mm-hmm. Because in college, you don't have to. If they're down, they're down. And, oh, buddy, he heard it when he got back to the sidelines. It's those, like you said, you can know it on paper. You can know the rules. But when you get on the field, instinctually, you go back to what you've always done. So it's about creating
Torrey
those new
won't
habits.
Do that again.
Nope.
No, I bet. And Malafor was actually asked earlier this week about that Saints game, changing how he runs practices preseason, getting ready for the opener. And he said, very possibly, you know, it at least brings up the conversation. So I think we've seen a lot of changes in Matt LaFleur over the past year. He realized where the deficits were on this team, and he's working to fix them this offseason.
That's kind of interesting to me, too, because if you look back at what happened last year, you could say that it was a short-term sacrifice for a long-term gain, and it kind of worked out exactly according to plan. Like, they showed last year that you can lay an absolute dud in the regular season opener and still be the number one seed in the NFC playoffs. That's what happened, and they had no serious injuries in camp last year. Obviously, they mounted as the season went on, but they had no serious injuries in camp. They played like poo in Jacksonville against the Saints, lost big time to a completely inferior team, but they sacrificed that one game for the greater good, and then they were the number one seed, and obviously didn't do anything with it, but they were in position that they want to be in, that every team wants to be in, home field, the bye. It worked out according to plan last year, so it's kind of interesting to me that they would be open to changing that.
A little
plan.
Different with facing the Vikings in week one.
That's true.
You know, are you going to sacrifice that in a division game? Are you assuming that you're going to run away with the division? I don't think so. So I wouldn't be surprised if he actually plays – some offense and defense in the final preseason game.
I do think they're going to run away with the division, though.
Offense, defense, weefense. Isn't that what he always says?
What's that?
Said offense, defense, weefense. Isn't that what he always says?
Weefense is something Rich Bisaccia came up with.
Yeah, that's brand new.
So they don't call, they call special
teams. Is that special
teams? Yes.
Okay, he has never explained it, and I thought, did I miss something?
If you would have read my story on Alan Levitt, he said they call it weefense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Actually, it was Ty Summers who said that. I was like, what? He's like, I'm like, refense? And he's like, no, weefense. And I'm like,
I honestly didn't realize
Daniel
Levitt's
story
was up yet. So apologies, I didn't realize the Levitt story was up. But no,
only
so
for like 3 weeks now.
No, it hasn't.
Only like 3 weeks.
It's felt like 3 weeks. It's felt like 3 weeks in camp already.
Well, Matt LaFleur said something this morning or Wednesday morning. He said the weefense phrase again, and whatever context he put in it, it clicked. And I was like, oh my God, he's talking about special teams.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad I read that because I was going to actually ask Matt LaFleur what the origin of that was. And I was like, wait, nope, I know now.
That's Bisaccia's deal.
Yeah.
You can need to ask Bisaccia him.
Bisaccia is changing a whole bunch of stuff up in here, and we will need to get into it more as we go on. But for now, guys, I'm going to let y'all go. I know we've got another day and then family night Friday night, which I believe it opened to the public completely, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you have tickets.
Tickets.
Yeah, you have
minor
to buy
detail.
Tickets. I think it's been sold out, huh? I'm not sure.
I would probably.
There is a story on PackersNews.com with all you need to know about family night.
Did they limit the attendance last year, or was it the weather that limited attendance last year?
Well, it's not. They don't let in 70,000. I don't think they fill in all the luxury boxes and stuff, but it's usually like around 60, 68.
Yeah, it just seemed a little down in attendance last year to me.
Aaron Rodgers said on Wednesday, he said, family night's one of those always fun because you never know what the weather's going to do. He said 1 year the weather kept them out and they still wanted to play, so they sent the players back to the locker room and they ordered 25 pizzas
while they waited to see what the weather app said, if they were going to get to play for family night or not.
And last year they ended in the rain. Sunny. It was.
Well, now you've jinxed it.
I remember being down on the field.
Well, it started with the storm, too.
Yeah.
They had to clear the bowl, right?
And then they were playing live football at the end. Remember, Jordan Love was quarterbacking, and I remember being down on the field. So, I won't be there, though.
No, you won't.
You will be in Canton.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
Good for you.
You guys have fun.
Well, why are you going to be there in Canton, Spoon? Let's remind the people.
Leroy Butler's being enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Long overdue.
yeah, congratulations
to
him.
As Brian Gutekunst said today, long overdue. It's good good to see that.
Yeah, so that should be interesting.
Enshrinement is Saturday.
I'll be going up onto the stage and saying, well, can we start five questions now? Or doing X's and O's up here, you know?
It's a good Packers news contact.
Like, hey, like, we got to work.
Noah Leroy, he probably would do it with you, too.
Probably.
He'd be like, sure, Spoon, I'm happy to, buddy. Yeah, we're very, very happy for Leroy. I think you can watch it at noon on Saturday. Leroy is the first speaker.
Yep.
So he told one of the other reporters here the other day, said the speech is supposed to be 8 minutes. He whittled his down, cut a lot out, and got it down to 12. So we'll see where he clocks in at on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know. Do they have like a gong?
I know. Is it like the Oscars? Do they start to play them all?
Well, we were talking about that today. How long would Leroy talk if there wasn't the Oscars playoff music?
Yeah, someone was reminding me. I think it was like Drew Pearson who went for like 2 hours or something. It's like you have to have a limit on
right.
this. It's crazy.
But we'll be really cool to hear him. A speech he wrote with his mom before she passed away because she knew he would be here one day getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
So very excited for Leroy. For now, this has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. Stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage as Packers continue training camp.